Welcome to the third episode of the sixth season of the Ubuntu podcast. It's Wednesday, the 27th of March, and in this episode, we are going to discuss what's been in the news. We'll also be talking about the latest happenings in the Ubuntu community. If you're listening live, you can send us messages using the chat facility on the website and in the IRC channel. I'm Mark, and joining me this week are Tony.
Good evening, Mark.
And Alan.
It totally is not the third episode.
No.
Did I say third?
It's the fifth episode, I think.
Somebody hasn't edited this piece of text.
Yeah. Sorry.
Somebody. No Laura this week, though. She's off on bigger and more interesting things, apparently, than being on the podcast.
Is it a Doctor Who podcast, by any chance?
Well, you joke. No, she's at a conference of some sort.
Okay.
Hopefully she'll be back in time for the next episode, but let's see.
What, next week?
I'm sure that it's not that long a conference.
Well, we shall see. It depends. It should be in the next episode or not. Wait and find out. Let's get on with some news.
Sounds like a fan-packed show.
First in the news, the Python trademark debacle is settled.
So remind us what was going on there?
Oh gosh, someone had a trademark and they wanted to enforce it and use the word Python as a product name in the UK, and the Python Foundation didn't like that because they've been using Python in the open source community for a long time, and the internet rose up like a giant demon and attacked this company who were outrageously using the brand name Python. And it's all sorted now, so we can go and fight some other battle.
Cool. Yeah, there are some lessons to learn, though, because although the Python Software Foundation had registered the trademark in the US, they hadn't registered it in Europe or apparently anywhere else in the world. This company were applying to the European trademark place to register it. So
an entirely reasonable thing to do.
Yeah.
Well, except that, you know, there's obviously the potential for confusion there.
There is, yes.
But, you know, if I saw something called Python Cloud, I would think, oh, that's running on Python.
But if you're a UK-based organisation who has no illusions of being an international player, you might want to trademark your product name in your region and not be particularly bothered about trademarks in other regions because they don't affect you.
Yeah, well, but the fact that it's not a registered trademark doesn't mean it's not a name that's in use.
No, but as part of the trademark registration, you find that out, don't you?
Well,
which they did find out.
The system works.
They found out in spades.
Yeah. Yes.
So, yeah, they've now withdrawn their trademark application and rebranded their Python Cloud service.
Hmm.
So they'll be calling it something else.
Perl Cloud.
Django Cloud.
I think you'll find it's Django.
Yes, Django Cloud.
Yeah, and apparently they're now going to support the Python Software Foundation in their use of Python as a software term.
I'm sure their support will be most welcome.
Yeah.
We're all friends, really.
Yes, let's send them some flowers. Or some pythons.
In a box.
Right. What's next in the news, Tony?
There's a story about OpenShot, the open source video editor.
Have you used OpenShot?
I have. It's the thing that I use when I edit video.
Ah.
So this is quite an interesting story.
Being a video editor, that's probably quite a good use to put it to.
Yeah, I tried to use it to edit text files, but it was fairly rubbish at that. It's the open source video editor, one of several that have existed over the years, but they've kicked off a Kickstarter campaign.
And what's the goal?
$20,000.
To do what?
Basically, to... And
I came across rather aggressively.
Oh, what?
What are they going to do with that money, Tony?
They are going to rewrite the core engine of OpenShot. This is always something that works out well for software projects.
Well, it sounds like, they've actually started work already. Yeah. They've got quite a bit of the way along.
But when I first saw this or read this, I was quite sceptical because I know other video editor projects that have said, all these video libraries we use are a bit shonky, we need to go away and write our own and then disappear into the ether.
Right.
But reading through the Kickstarter page, it seems that they have actually been working on this for a couple of years and it's nearly ready for prime time and they need a bit of money to push it over, I guess, for developer time, just to kind of push it over the finishing line.
Mm. Right. And one of the key things that I've noticed in the Kickstarter, which kind of made me cringe a little bit, was that one of the goals is to make it cross-platform.
Yeah.
And release a video editor on Windows and on OS X.
Yeah. Now, go on.
No, it just, I don't know. Okay, the developers can choose to be on whatever platforms they want to. It's entirely up to them. But given your main selling point when you first started was we're doing a video editor that works on Linux that, you know, nobody else seems to have managed to do properly, a nice, easy-to-use video editor.
Yeah.
To then and not have enough resources to be able to get that to completion, because it isn't yet. It still crashes. It still can't open certain file formats. To then branch out and say, hey, let's go over there where there are already loads of video editors that are really, really good, and let's try and dominate there as well, I think is misguided.
It certainly seems to be a risk of spreading yourself very thin to do that.
Well, and I mean, if their rewrite is you know, cross-platform from the start, so you know they're not having to go through any additional overhead in order to make this cross-platform, then maybe there isn't an additional amount of developer resource to go cross-platform.
Yeah,
but there must be some platform-specific stuff.
Yeah, and they're relying on all the typical good old video libraries. According to the webpage, it relies on FFmpeg and
Melt
various. Actually, I'm not sure about Melt anymore, but various other kind of things that are readily available on Linux but aren't on Windows by default.
By default. Yeah, they're not on Linux by default.
Okay, you know, you have to have the whole thing of packaging them and bundling them in.
Right.
Because people running Windows applications expect it to be one binary that you double-click, it goes through a wizard and installs it. So they have to bundle all these libraries with the product normally.
I think that's less of an issue, actually, on Windows and on the Mac. I think that's less of a problem because you're not going to have the freedom-loving bunch telling you can't ship that library, you can't ship that codec with that library, you can't mix this with that. On Windows, people go, yeah, whatever, it's a download. I'll put it on my machine. I don't really care. I'm more concerned about the fact that they're spreading out away from, you know, making the core thing really excellent.
Yeah.
The actual video editor itself really excellent and branching out onto somewhere where there are already dominant players that are pretty excellent.
Well, they've already reached $13,000 of their $20,000 target, and I think there's about a week or so to go. So they may well reach that.
They might do, yeah.
So then the question is, of the people who are giving money, are they Linux users who want to see a decent open source video editor, or are they people who genuinely want to see this ported to Windows or Mac OS? Which is obviously a question we can't answer, but it's an interesting thing to think about.
I'm just pondering how many people think in the same way. Maybe I'm wrong, and maybe it's a selfish thing to think that, you know, we should have this for Linux and not bother trying to port to another platform. I can completely understand that perspective. But I'm just wondering how many other people have the same point of view as me and don't donate because of that.
Yeah. But also there's Lightworks, isn't there, which is due to be open sourced or has been open sourced
any minute now
as an alpha.
Which is a roundabout. We should have a timer on the wall that's counting down.
which will develop.
Lightworks open source yet? .com.
Get on it.
But that will deliver an open source video editor for Windows, Mac, and Linux.
But that already existed.
Yes, I know, but it's being open sourced and is available as an alpha.
Right.
I'm not saying to the OpenShot guys they should stop. I wish them all the luck in the world. I think they should really go ahead and try and deliver their product in the way they want to do it. But, you know, we're starting to have a bit of a conflict between those two things, I think.
It's almost like text editors 10 years ago.
Yeah.
We've got so many of them.
Well, beside the cross-platformness, I'm not really a video person, but Tony is. Are there any other features which they've talked about which are, you know, would be quite cool to have that OpenShot needs?
They're integrating rendering and things into it as well, so you can do sort of animated titles and that sort of thing.
So is that not reliant on Blender anymore?
I don't know.
Because previously, it was quite comprehensive. If you had Blender on your system, you could get OpenShot and specify some settings for where you wanted overlay text and how you wanted to zoom onto the screen, and it would then spawn off Blender to render out the series of frames to generate that 3D intro.
I don't know. Cunning, demonstration videos didn't work when I went to their website.
So my
sorry, this is the video editor's website. The videos didn't work.
I think that's probably Flash on
Tony's. No, it's Vimeo. It never works.
Okay. I have very simple requirements for most video editors in that I start recording and there's loads of fluff at the front, and then there's the bit in the middle that I actually want to keep, and then there's the bit at the end where I'm moving the mouse around or talking stupidly and stopping the video camera. And all I want to do is chop the front and the end off that video. And I had this last week. I tried to just top and tail a video, and the video editor I happened to use hung while it was rendering out. And that is just like the absolute simplest thing that I want to do.
Yep.
It's like using the you know, the Unix head and tail commands. They are like absolute minimum requirement to like top and tail a file.
Yeah.
And I just find it incredibly frustrating that the simple stuff doesn't work. I think it's great to have fabulous goals like the NovaCut guys have got with, you know, distributed video editing and these new user interfaces or ways of editing video. But if you can't get the absolute basics working, no hope.
Yeah, give OpenShot a try.
Okay.
Okay, Mark, what's up?
Chinese R&D companies have partnered with our friends Canonical to produce an operating system for Chinese users.
Oh, okay. So is this based on Ubuntu?
It is. It's called Kylin, or if that's how you pronounce it.
I don't know either.
I'm not big on my anglicized Chinese words. But yeah, so it's I think it's initially basically going to be a highly localized version of Ubuntu by the sound of it.
So what sort of things will be different in this from stock Ubuntu?
So for example, I don't know if this will be in Kylin, but I know one of the requirements that there are state mandated guidelines on computers in China. So if you ship a computer that's got an operating system pre-installed, there are some things that have to be there. So for example, if you're shipping to
surveillance,
yeah, I could see surveillance keyloggers, you know, all that kind of stuff.
All the things that the free software organizations stand for.
Actually, the only one that I'm aware of is actually an introduction tutorial that's mandated.
Really?
Yeah. And it's actually something we don't ship on Ubuntu in any other region other than China, is a tutorial that takes you through what all the icons mean down the left-hand side and, you know, how you open documents and how you open a browser and stuff like that. And it's because the kind of people that they're selling to in the middle of nowhere of China, where there are, you know, many millions of people of this demographic have zero computing experience whatsoever. They live in a village in the middle of nowhere. Exactly the kind of you know, thing you've seen on TV of people living in the countryside, and this is their first computer, and they just don't know. You know, it's all very well us saying the computer is intuitive, but you know, the absolute first user experience. Yeah. It's mandated by the government that there's
so. Is this part of a drive to get more of China using computers then?
I don't know. I'm not quite sure what the motivation behind it was, but it seems like they want to have something that is, you know, flexible and tailored for their locale.
Cool. So is this going to be bundled with hardware?
Well, we already ship computers with Ubuntu on over there. There's hundreds of stores in China that sell Dell computers with Ubuntu pre-installed, and it is a localized version with the modifications that are mandated for that region. So it's not a bog standard install of Ubuntu.
So Kylin maybe goes a step further and provides additional customizations.
Yeah, and there's going to be a bi-directional communication between the community in China and Canonical, and also with the government in order to fulfill whatever their requirements are.
And also, there's some sort of web services which are quite specific to China, because obviously certain websites which we're very familiar with aren't allowed in China, so they have their own sort of equivalent. So I think Kylin's going to be integrated with those the way that our Ubuntu might be integrated with Twitter and Facebook and things like that.
Yeah, even like stuff like their chat thing is QQ. Their social thing is called QQ, and you know, nobody uses that. That happens a lot around the world. In Brazil, there's Orkut, which is a Google product.
Yes, yeah.
And that's used heavily in Brazil, nowhere else, you know. And the same in you know, Japan and China. There's very locale specific things, and there's no point us shipping that stuff in the base distro in the English language version, because nobody would use it.
Okay, well, interesting to see what comes of that one then.
Next we have Nokia, who have declared they will not freely license WebM technologies to Google.
So last week we spoke about an agreement that WebM, no, not with there, MPEG-LA had struck with Google over licensing the web, the patents in WebM.
Yeah, this all becomes clear again now.
Yeah.
So MPEG-LA is a consortium of companies who all have a set of patents that cover video encoding and decoding type things.
And so they then broker licensing agreements with people for doing things like H.264. I think they do the DVD playback licensing as well.
DVD CSS, that's a separate company, I think. Well, they did the MPEG video bit.
Yes. Yeah. So they basically agreed with Google that Google could distribute WebM even if it infringes in patents of MPEG-LA members. They're going to stop trying to form a pool of patents to attack them.
But in swoops Nokia.
Yes, and says,
No,
we're not going to do that. You apparently infringe... Well, they're saying that WebM infringes 64 of their granted patents and 24 of their... pending patents, which is sounds awfully familiar to Microsoft's claims over Linux a couple of years ago. But whether it means they're actually going to, you know, litigate against them or just stand there on the sidelines to put people off adopting WebM remains to be seen. But their argument was that it's a proprietary technology which offers no advantages over existing widely deployed standards. Even though it's an open source, openly defined.
I used to really like Nokia.
Yeah.
Before they sold out.
Well, you know, before they went all rubbish. Yeah.
At what point did they go rubbish?
When Stephen Elop joined the company, basically.
Yeah.
It all went downhill from there, really. They made great phones. They had loads of great phones in the pipeline. Mm. But they completely mismanaged them and missold them and... That was a real shame.
They were a bit behind the curve on the smartphone market, though, weren't they?
Some of them were, but they kind of caught up, and they had loads in development, but then they never shipped them, or they shipped them in such restricted numbers, or were in very limited regions, like only in Finland, for example, you could buy certain phones. And, you know, there's a giant market over in the west of the planet that that would quite like to buy some of those phones.
And indeed in the east of the planet.
Well, yeah, as well, yeah. And now some of that hardware... technology that was in, say, for example, the N9, which is absolutely beautiful phone, a gorgeous piece of equipment and a lovely operating system, is now being seen. That hardware innovation is seen in the Lumia range, which now run Windows Phone.
Yeah, in fact, I bumped into Andy Piper the other week, who had one of those to play around with.
Yes,
it was, you know,
it's
all
a
right.
phone. Yeah,
it's a phone.
Right.
The Tiley thing looked quite interesting on a little screen. But then, other than that, it's not terribly exciting.
Such a shame.
Yeah,
fair enough. And Forbes have been in the news as well. They've been writing lists, and taking
them
names
twice,
and they've named Mark Shuttleworth as one of the most disruptive people in
dot dot dot.
It says here in business in 2013, specifically in the area of computing, disruptive in a good way, I assume.
Yeah, I would imagine so. But, well, in either way, really.
He didn't just run into the room at parties and go, the crisps on the floor.
I don't think disruption necessarily implies good, but it implies change.
Well, people talk about disruptive technologies as a generally positive thing, unless you're part of the old guard, I guess.
I kind of feel bad that I don't actually recognise a single other person on the list.
Are they all
business.
Technology people?
No, they're from every, like, healthcare, media, retail, social media. Okay. There's lots of areas, and you know, you can obviously click through to each one of them and find out
who they are,
and you know, there's a guy, founder of University Now, who's from San Francisco, and
that is.
Well,
I
yeah,
probably
exactly.
should know that what that is. That sounds like something which I would know.
And some guy who works for who's the founder of Aereo, AEREO in New York. Never
lovely
heard of
chocolate
him.
Bars they make.
He looks like a nice chap, but no idea who he is. So clearly, I'm at the wrong end of the scale here, not knowing who a single one of these. And of the 12. Classes, there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 12 classes, but in total, some of them have got multiple people in. So,
So
16 people in total.
Do you think that most people will be seeing Mark Shuttleworth on that list and having exactly the same reaction to him that you had to...
Yeah, exactly.
Well, these lists are always very important.
There's two women on the list out of 16 total.
Oh, well, that's good.
We're not in any position to talk about being representative this evening, unfortunately, on this show.
No.
But yes, interesting lists, always good fun.
Yes.
Right, let's get on with the next bit.
The Ubuntu podcast needs you. Yes, you. If you hear something that enthralls, exasperates, or elevates you, tweet at UUPC or email podcast@ubuntu-uk.org. You can also talk to us on the telephone, Skype, Facebook, and Google+. Find links to all these places on our website, podcast.ubuntu-uk.org. Please do get in touch. I mean it. Just one message. Just to know there's someone out there who cares.
It's time for the community news, and first up this week, we have a blog post from Matthew Garrett, the angry, angry Matthew Garrett, writing about a secure boot and restricted boot.
Yeah, he was. There was a conference in Boston, I think it was, over the weekend called Libre Planet, talking about openness and free software and all that kind of good stuff. Hmm. And Matthew gave a talk about secure boot and restricted boot. And it was very interesting, and he explained it in a very simple, easy to understand way, mm-hmm. in typical Matthew style. And then had a little Q&A afterwards with some heated discussion with members of the audience. And it was videoed, and we've got the video on link from his blog. And it's really worth a watch. If all this secure boot, restricted boot stuff sounds a little bit cloudy in your head, then I would watch that video because it's worth watching, and he makes it very, very clear.
Yeah. Cool. Even the blog post is pretty clear as well.
Yeah.
So if you can't watch the video for some reason, read the words.
There was also an IRC meeting.
What? Yep. What? That is an item, is it?
Yeah, well, it's about...
There was a meeting.
The meeting was of the Ubuntu Technical Board, and the Ubuntu Technical Board were reviewing some of their proposals around changes to the upcoming release strategy.
So this
the way
was talking
managed.
About, how long are things going to be supported for? Will there be a rolling release? Mm-hmm. And things like that.
What was the conclusion?
Yes.
the conclusion is there was a meeting.
Yeah,
got that right.
There were three things on the agenda. There were three members out of seven on the technical board in attendance.
Right.
Which is not great, I guess.
Mm.
It's quite a small number of people to make some potentially large decisions about the way the Ubuntu release strategy works.
But yeah, well, the good news is that all this stuff has been debated ad infinitum for the last preceding month.
Yes.
And discussed in public open forums like mailing lists. So I think all the people, if they were going to object, would have done so by now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there were other people in the meeting who were voicing opinions, but obviously only the technical board members actually have a vote.
Yes.
Because mm-hmm. they are voted on. So they were looking at reducing the length of support for regular non-LTS releases. So that's the things that come out every 6 months at the moment.
Yep.
Reducing that down from 18-month support to 9 month support.
So that means that you'd have 3 months after the next release to upgrade to that.
Yeah.
Yeah, which would be big problems for me.
Why?
Because I never get around to upgrading in time.
So why don't you run LTS?
Yeah, don't then.
Yeah, I do effectively run LTS. So
supported by you for the long term.
Yeah, I roll my own patches. So LTS releases would stay 5 years support, but the idea is to reduce the burden on the Ubuntu community and infrastructure and people of packaging all these security updates and things for releases that, hopefully a few people use and help encourage people to move off and move on and move up. So that's going to change from 13.04, so from this next release.
Yeah, just next month.
Yeah.
And also they decided that as a sort of, a solution to the rolling release idea, that something should be implemented so that you can basically say, always keep me on the development release.
Right.
And that means that, so you'll be running, say at the moment you'd be running Raring, and then when Raring is released, you automatically roll over to whatever the next release is called.
Yeah, so there'll be like monthly cuts, like 13.05, 13.06, 13.07, that kind of thing.
I think it's just like you've got on your laptop at the moment, you can upgrade whenever and you'll get the latest.
You're constantly getting
You constantly packages. Get it. But then when the release happens, you don't then have to say, don't leave me on raring upgrade
right,
me. It
me
just
going.
Says it just says, oh, you want to always have the latest thing, so keep
like
you
on
the development
Debian testing.
Yeah, exactly. So you're constantly getting the next stuff up. You don't have to do anything, which I think is a really good idea.
Yeah.
And it's just a case of a few symlinks effectively.
Yeah.
And managing those whenever there's a new release.
You could tell Colin Watson that his job is just a bunch of symlinks.
No, not his whole job, but it's
that bit of it.
That bit of it is a relatively simple thing to implement.
Off you go then.
Yeah, you tell him that.
Oh dear, that's not what I meant. They briefly also discussed some changes to the update tool to allow users to upgrade by more than a single release at a time.
Oh, I missed that bit.
So to jump from 12.10, for example.
So if you do then the 9 month support and you've let it lapse, you can skip that one and go to the next over that.
So 12.10, 13.10, or even 14.04.
Oh, that'd be good.
Yeah. So some interesting decisions. I think all the right ones in my humble opinion.
Good.
Cool. And a bug in Fedora's bug tracker meant that Fedora bugs couldn't be tracked.
Someone should find a bug about that. Oh.
Hey.
So this was because the code name for Fedora 18 is Schrodinger's cat.
Yes, which has an umlaut over the O.
And an apostrophe after the R.
Ah.
Yeah, both of them together are a pain.
It's a good job they didn't name it Schrodinger's drop tables.
So I saw people mention this on Google Plus and various places and be quite confident that this wouldn't affect us.
Yeah,
in Ubuntu land, and I thought, well, that's quite bold. I'm not sure I would
make that
assertion.
Did you file a bug
with
the title Schrodinger's cat?
No, I went one better than that. I created a project called Schrodinger's Siamese.
I did see that mention. Right.
Yeah, so I created a project called Schrodinger's Siamese, and that was okay. Then I started creating, more elements within Launchpad to build up an entire project to find out at what point it would break. I was using the staging instance of Launchpad, not the live, just in case I broke it. And I did find at least one. I stopped when I found one, just to prove my point that ours isn't, we could be bitten by this if Mark decided that the S release in 6 months is going to be Schrodinger's Siamese, which I think it should be.
There's a town in the Netherlands, I believe, which is really good to use in test data for addresses because its name begins with an apostrophe.
Excellent.
Brilliant. Oh, that's excellent.
I think there's a bug in Launchpad that stops any of my bugs getting resolved. I think I found that.
No, that's just you.
Okay.
And we've got a few events.
Yeah, the first one being Digital Freedom, being the Culture Freedom Day, the second Culture Freedom Day, supported by the Digital Freedom Foundation. It's going to be on the 18th of May, and it's a day for celebrating free culture. You can register for more information and potentially even get a support pack at culturefreedomday.org.
That's interesting because there's Software Freedom Day in September. Mm. And today, I think, is Document Freedom Day, isn't it?
Yes, I think I saw something about that.
Yes.
Simon Phipps put something on Google+.
I saw it on Google Plus about 3 o'clock this afternoon. And I pointed out that the website says that they are advocacy and raising awareness of Document Freedom Day. And I said they'd done a pretty bad job if I didn't find out until 3 o'clock in the afternoon on
maybe
the day.
It was in America.
Yeah, maybe.
You did find out. That's the point.
The Institute of Engineering Technology are running a Raspberry Pi GPIO workshop at Solent University in Southampton on the 12th of April, and it's free. This is learning how to use all of the output pins on your Raspberry Pi.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah.
Oh, that's good. Better than just booting up Debian and
you running XBMC on your telly.
Exactly,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And turning it off again.
And finally, Ohio Linux Fest is looking for talks for their 2013 event, which will be held in September 13th to the 15th in Columbus, Ohio. They're looking for a variety of talks at all levels, from beginners through intermediate and advanced. Any topic relating to free and open source software to open hardware is fair game for a talk. Just go to ohiolinux.org/CFP and fill out the submission form.
Cool. That's all for this episode. Thank you for listening, and join us next time when we'll be interviewing Benjamin Carenza from the Open Photo Project, going over your feedback and having some command line love.
Yeah. Yeah. No, GUI love.
No, I'm pretty sure it's command line love.
Is it?
Yeah, unless you've changed it, no, it's command line love.
Is it? Oh, dear.
I love how confident we are in our own segments here.
We'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.